My name is Tim Keene, TDK Consulting Services. That's why it's TDK. This presentation, or this is a bit about me, do consulting service. This is mostly in here because I've been doing this for a while and people keep saying, I don't know what you do. I am a contractor, consultant, stuff like that. So you guys can read this later. I won't take up your time with it now. The session overview, go over and definition. What is an event? What advantages do events bring? How to set up and run an event? So we'll go and put some code together to go and do an event and run it through. Implementing a non-event based invoicing system. Basically, we're going to use the Sports 2000 database to go and generate invoice numbers for customers based on certain attributes. Then we're going to go and convert that to an event based system. So this is going to be more closely to what you probably are used to, particularly if you're coming from a procedural world and you don't use events yet. Then we're going to convert this to an event-based system, which will do the exact same thing, but differently using events. Then we're going to go and refactor that for maximum flexibility. The events themselves provide you with a certain level of flexibility in terms of tying things together, and the conversion of a non-event to an event-based system gives us some advantages, but there's a lot further we can go with that. So what I'm going to be doing is stepping through a process to go and show how to go and take this little box and split up it further into little pieces that can then be used to go and give you maximum flexibility in terms of assembling components on the fly to accomplish various goals in your business. And then if we have the time, we didn't finish the workshop. I don't know if we're going to finish this. I also have something to go use events for code instrumentation. We all have cases where we have, start a procedure up here, it goes wind up, and you got like all these levels of stuff going on, and it would be really nice to know what's going on as it's doing it without having to go and tie it into the debugger. Particularly if we're going and doing things we want to go and show the user. We are this far along, but how far along are you if the code's way down here, and you're supposed to keep the business logic separate from the UI. This will be a very simple demonstration on how to do that. So, definition of an event. An event is a notification that something happened. It could be a mouse hover, could be that the window was resized, you have a change of user input, new record being processed, so you got a for each, and you've gone to the next record, so you go and publish an event saying, here's my record. Logical condition has been met. So you're doing a total up of a bunch of numbers for a particular customer, how much production they had for the particular month. I've got my number, I published an event, here's the total weight that they did. Calculation results is available. So we got the customer, we got the weight, and we have a price. Okay, here's the charge. So we got a calculated result that's available, that can be used by another process or another object to go and do what it needs to do. Basically, or something might need to do something. One of the features that events brings is that they do not have to be run. You can go and say publish an event and have no subscribers. It's sort of like standing in a room and you say something and there's nobody to hear it, so nothing happens. Same thing here. So this makes events optional, only usable when you actually need to use it or you want to use it. So what advantages do events bring to a system? The big one is it decouples software modules. If you go and look at your typical procedural program, you got run, into a program, into a program, into a program. They're all tied very tightly together. They're like this. You can't pull them apart. So if you go and change this side of an API, you've got to change this side of an API. They all have to be matched up. With events, we can go and decouple that significantly and not have to worry about, well, we make a change on this one, do I have to worry about this side of the API as well? It eliminates the need for a module to know what called it or what it's calling. Our procedural stuff or our procedural-ish object-oriented stuff run x.p, well, you know what you're running. And if x.p is being run, you do like a source procedure, you can see who is calling you. With events, that eliminates the need to know either side of the equation. You can have an opt which has a couple of methods, a method and a counter in it, and it's just a box. It doesn't know what's coming in there. It doesn't care. You have a source or an event source which goes and says, okay, this condition is met, publish. This event has been met, publish. Put something out there. Whether there's anybody to hear it or not is irrelevant. This piece of code doesn't care. You got two pieces of code that don't care about whether something's coming out there or not, whether something's coming in or not. That decouples the two, and so it just significantly simplifies the assumptions that you have to apply to the code when you're writing it. What this means is that it greatly enhances the ability to assemble a collection of component functionality together on the fly. Typically in our procedural stuff, you go run x.p. The best we can do in terms of being flexible is we can go say run value of a string, or you got objects, maybe call a different one, something with a different parameter. This allows us to go and tie an arbitrary collection of objects together to accomplish a particular goal. That also means that because we can do this on the fly, what we do on the first iteration of the loop could be completely different from the second iteration of the same loop, because we assembled them together differently. Supports associating an arbitrary number of modules with an event. Whenever you publish an event, you can have zero to a bunch of subscribers. The publisher doesn't care. The system, the AVM handles, when I go and say publish my event, it handles saying, okay, run this, run this, run this. It's sort of like going and having a loop of entries of places to go and run the code, and then running through that, having it done magically for you to go and pass the stuff and fire up all these other events that are subscribed to by other objects. So you can have zero if the context requires it. You could have one, you could have a bunch. It doesn't matter. So here is how we go and set up an event. So simple object to count to 10. So we have defined public event, count event. So we have that, we're defining something, that's the accessor for it. This is what we are defining, it's the event, that's the name of the event. Signature void, this is describing the calling signature. When this thing goes and publishes, this is what we're gonna be sending out. Events have no return value. So if you go and put something out there, it's always going to be void. And then this is the values that you're going to be passing out as parameters. This is going to be matched on the subscriber side with a similar, with an identical type. It's got a method, going to have a method name and identical type. This is our method public void, which is going to be a count values. What it does is it defines a variable iCount as an integer. We have a count from 1 to 10. We go and say, this object count event, so that corresponds to this, and this we're going to say we're going to publish the current value for I count. So we're going to go from 1 to 10, publish I count as it goes along, and that'll be it. So when count values is fired, so we instantiate the class, and we fire off count values, it's going to go and publish 10 events of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 for each iteration. So that is the event. So that's the definition of the event here. This is the action of the event here. Yes?
Does the event name have to be in scope to publish to an event that is saying, you know, I'm subscribing anywhere, so to speak? I guess my question is, in the conventional way Progress deals with PubSub,
yes,
we can just publish and we don't need to know what we're publishing to you because the subscriber's waiting for it.
Right.
We don't have to explicitly say it belongs to this object.
Well, in this case, this I'm saying this object. That's the convention that I use to go and say this is a component of this object, because you can go and have inheritance, you can have overriding and things like that. This is my personal convention here. You don't have to go and use this object here if you don't want to.
Right, but it is required to be in scope is what I'm saying.
Yes.
Whereas conventional PubSub in Progress, you did not have to have it in scope.
Procedural PubSub,
yes,
could be anywhere. Right. You can go and say pub on behalf of somebody else. You can do that. I don't use PubSub because of other issues. It's a difficult thing to work with for me. But this stuff, you cannot do a publish outside the class. You have to do it in the class. And then this is the event that you're publishing from. So it has to be inside. You're not publishing on behalf of somebody else. And the subscriber part of it is generally handled by something else, which we'll get into in a moment. So here is our procedure that runs this whole thing. So we define OCount to 10 as example count to 10 to go, and that's our class. And then this is something to go and display the count value in. Here's our frame, fcount, and that's in iCount disk with a down value. We instantiate OCount to 10 with our count to 10 class. And then we go and say subscribe to count event. So count event is a member of count to 10, the class. And we're going to say we want to subscribe to that event. And since we're in a procedure, we put the internal procedures name here as the target of the subscription. One of the things that you can, features of OO events is that you can go and have a target of a procedure, in which case you have to use a string, or a method, in which case you can't use a string. Not sure why, but that's just the way it is. And then OCount to 10, this is going to fire off our for each, or do one, iCount equals 1 to 10, and it's going to fire off 10 events, and it's going to go, which is going to publish a value. And then display event is a procedure that's going to go and display stuff in this frame. We have an input parameter. This input parameter here of integer corresponds to the publish event publish definition in count to 10. And then we display the parameter at here with that frame. And then since we're doing it down here, we're not in a loop where it automatically downs for us. We have to go and say down with frame fcount. And this is, so that's the subscription source. This is what's tying us into the event in count to 10. This is the target, and this is what it looks like. So very simple, this is how you would set up an event, and then you would go and use it, and it comes back and gives you a series of numbers, which you can then go and display. So for I equals 1 to 10, there you go. Now, if we are coming to a traditional non-event OO paradigm, and we're going to migrate it to a OO paradigm, here's a example of a starting point. First, we're going to go and present a non-event OO structure. Then we're going to change it to an event-based OO structure. We're going to compare the before and after dependencies that are involved in the two cases. And here we go. So in this particular case, we're going to process a customer table. We've got a class definition up here and the closing class down there. We have the property customer count. So that is just going to be counting the customers that we're going to find. And then we have a state count as an integer. So we're going to count for those. This method is going to process all customers, and the process is for each customer, no lock break by customer.state. So we're going to have a break condition on state. And this is how we're going to count. So this object, customer count equals this. So for every customer record, customer count goes up by one. For every customer state, because we have a when first of customer state, the state count goes up by one. So that is the functionality of process all customers. In our other invoicing or production stuff like that, you would have filters or other things like that in there to go and say, this is what I want to read. Now, this piece here, this corresponds to the read logic. You go and have in your traditional procedural or non-event based OO type stuff that you would go and say, these are the things that I want to read and pull out, and then the next step is, what am I going to do with that? So this is the read logic here, and this corresponds to the calculation logic. As you can see that because we're doing it this way, it's all in one big box. And then, so this is how it's used. So this is the .p that's going to be running it. You know, define the process customer table for the process customer table class. We instantiate that. Since there's nothing in the constructor, we don't do anything other than make it. And then we go and call the method to process all customers. So that's going to go and fire off the for each and go and count the number of customer records and the number of distinct states in the customer table. Comes back with the customer count and then the state count, and the net result is 1,117 customers in 81 states. I'm guessing we're shipping internationally now. Okay, so this is what the dependencies of that particular example look like. We have process customer table dot run.p, which is the procedure which is firing all this stuff off. We have process all customers in the process customer table, which is firing off this piece here. So that method is gets run. It generates those two values here, which are then brought back out to message to our view as alert box. So again, just like we have with typical procedures, you have this tight binding together. There, if you go and change one side, you got to change the other side, and concerns about that. So an overview, a different way of looking at that, is that here's the .p, here's the class, you have the method that's set over here, accessed over here, and the properties which cross the API border there as well. So they are tightly coupled together. And to put it another way, they know more about each other. ProcessCustomerTable.p and ProcessCustomerTable.class know more about each other than they need to know. This is our typical situation that we have because we didn't have an option before to go and do it a different way. So this is a very common thing you would see in a lot of classes or procedural work. So this has implication for development speed and flexibility. If you go and change something in the APIs here in terms of how it's called, you have to go and change all the places that call it as well. Overloading, polymorphism, whatever you call it, does give you certain flexibility to go and extend or change the API in ways that don't impact your code base, but it's not as flexible as it could be. So, continuing our migration, go west, young man. Here's the afterlook. So we're just going to call this one scan customer table. So we have a class definition of scan customer table here. We have a customer event and a state event. Instead of variables, we're going to have events. And then we have the method public, don't return anything, to go and scan all customers. For each customer by customer.state. So we're still doing the break bys. We're still going through the entire table. If first of customer state, then we're going to go and publish a state event. In this particular case, publish is allowed to go and pass a parameter like we saw with the count to 10 class example. In this case, I'm just firing off saying, I found a customer. You can go put parameters in there and pass those out as well though if you want. And then for every customer record, I'm also going to say, I'm gonna publish a customer event. So I have a state event for every first up state that is true. And then for every customer record, I'm gonna go and publish a customer event. So that's published when a new state is found, and this one is published for every customer. And this is the ScanCount class. Okay, and so what we call this is a ScanCount, and all this is an event count property, and an event increment method. And all it does is say event count equals event count plus one. This is effectively a class-based version of our x equals x plus one that was in the original non-event version of this program. There's a reason for this, and we'll get that in a second. But that's gonna be linked to the published event that came from our scan table, and that's gonna be the reference we're gonna use to get the final count out of this class. So I have scan table customer run, which is the dot P that holds this whole thing. You have scan customer table, which is going, or OScan customer table, which is going to be scanning the table. So it's going to do the for each to the customer, break by state. And we have customer count, is going to be a scan count. So it's going to be just a counter, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And state count, same class. So we're using the same class definition for two different purposes here. So that's less code that we have to worry about. If you have business logic in there that has to go and manage or do different things based on what the events are publishing, this is a flexible way to go and split these things up, and you only have to worry about what to do with this event as opposed to why the event was fired. We go and instantiate the scan customer table class, and we go and create or instantiate the customer count and the state count classes. So we have the class that's going to do the scanning, go through all the customer records, and we have two classes that's going to count everything up. And then we have, this is how we go and tie everything together. So from the scan customer table, we're going to go and take the customer event and subscribe customer counts event increment method to it. So whenever a customer event is fired in this instance, that method in that object will be run. Okay? We're going to do the same thing for states. So we're going to subscribe the state event, and then it's going to go and fire off the state count object's event increment method. So this is how we're going and passing information from scan customer table to customer count, O customer count, and O state count. And then this scan customer table goes and fires this off, and then we got a message to go and show how many customers we found and how many states we found. So this is that's the definition. This is the instantiation of the objects. This is where we're linking things together. And this is where the power of events comes to the fore, is that I can go and put code to go and say, link this class to this class. I can go and say, I need this class, and this class, and then tie these published sources with subscribers on the fly. Here's the execution. So when I go and do this, it's going to go through all the customers. It's going to fire off the event increments in these two classes. And the next thing we get is the result showing on the screen, telling us what it found. So this is how, that's all code, and it's kind of hard to go and follow and conceptualize this. So this is a more graphic representation of what's going on. So we have scan customer table here as an instance of a class, and that's going to be the method that we're going to fire. O customer count, another object instance of the scan count class. O state count, an instance of the scan count class. So they're two instances of the same class, but we're using them differently. And then the customer event, whenever scan customer table fires off a customer event, it's going to call event increment for the customer. And when it fires off the state event, it's going to fire off the event increment in the scan, in the O state count scan count class. That's going to bump up the event counter over here for the customer, and for the state, it's going to bump up the event counter in there. So it's the same class definition, but a different instance of it. So we're using this to count customers and this to count states. So that is less code that we have to worry about. And then we pull the scan count event count method our properties out of O customer count, out of O state count, to go and display it in our message box.
Excuse me.
Yes.
I realize that this is demonstrating what you can do with this. Probably incrementing numbers by one isn't the, but what is like the real performance cost? Is, we're always in a situation where we got to. This might be the right way to do it, but if it takes too much time to do it, we might need to do it a slightly. We may not be able to do it the best way we should as developers. Where how much cost is, because it's my understanding that classes are built on the super procedure architecture. And
so the question is, if we're using events, what is the cost in terms of performance? And I would expect it would be the same as if we're calling a super procedure. The difference here is that because we have a specific reference here, super procedures have to go and search the stack to go and find the API. This one we know is the O customer account instance, or we know it's the O state count instance. If you have multiple subscribers to a particular event, the AVM keeps track of all those instances and says, you run, you run, you run, you run. So it doesn't have to do all the searching that super procedures have to do. It's right there. Yes?
If everything's flat, I believe super procedures and objects are equal.
Super procedures and objects are being equal in
for a flat reference. But when you start layering super,
yes,
OO destroys the super procedures.
There's some type of compilation resolution at the in there to continue, you know, instead of like layering super procedures on top of each other as you're narrating.
Okay, we're getting a bit of feel of that. It's a legitimate question, but it's for the amount of stuff I have to cover here. But to go back to what you're thinking of here, okay, with super procedures, what you can have and what Progress has done is that you can go and have a procedure, say it's a super procedure, another one is a super procedure, and the order that you put them in there is the order that they appear in the stack. So if you go and say, I want to go and run XYZ, looks here, can't find it, looks here, can't find it, looks here, can't find it, blah, 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 blah. It has to go and search through all that stuff. Now, that takes time. If you have a bunch of session super procedures, it has to go and search through all of those to go and find the first instance of that API. So if you have multiple ones, it'll stop at the first one that matches. With objects, it's right there. So we don't have that problem. It's comparable to like a super procedure of a procedure. Yes?
Is there any reliability issue for messages going down the same bus?
Across a WAN?
Yeah.
This is all internal to the session. This piece here is all internal to the session. This publish subscribe is about objects in a session. Okay. So we're not crossing on borders. If you're doing something like that, you'd be looking at something like Stop or Stomp or RabbitMQ or any of the messaging infrastructure. Any other questions? Okay. The one other possible implications here that I've run into is if you go and publish a string or something that is data heavy, if Progress, I haven't tried this out for myself, but I have done it where I've gone and say, run something and it doesn't do anything, all it does is return, is that, you know, it has to push that on the stack and then it has to pop it back off. And if it's a big string or something else like that, there is an impact to going and moving that much data around that often. So you want to go and keep your payloads in your events either as small as possible, unless you know that you will always be using it. In which case, you can go and get as big as is reasonable for what you're doing. So this is the structure of the scan of our particular little invoicing system, which is going to go and bill a number of customers and a number of states. So this is what we have. You go and take those two numbers. Here's your bill. Thank you very much. But what this doesn't show you is more a different perspective in terms of which one of these objects knows what's going on. Who knows what when? Scan table, which is the object which goes through and scans all the customer records. When you start it up, it knows nothing. It knows it's got a for each, it's got two events, and that's it. Customer, instance of scan count, it's got a method, it's got a property. It doesn't know about scan table, doesn't know about the other instance of scan count. These three guys are all standalone. They don't communicate, they have no interaction with each other at this point in time. So what happens then is that scan customer table run, which is the enclosing .p that holds all these things, says, I want you to go and subscribe the event increment method to the customer event here, and the event increment method here to the state event here. So what you have is scan customer table has the knowledge in terms of what to instantiate and how to tie them together. That means that when you're coding these little guys here, you don't have to worry about that. Just go and say, this is the business logic I want you to execute, and when you meet this condition, publish an event. But you don't worry about who's on the other end, you know, right off the start. And then here you go and say, okay, here's a consumer that's going to bring that event in and it's going to do something with it. In our simplistic case here, it's just going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This one's going to go and count to over 1,000, this one's going to count to 80 something. So then this guy goes and says, scan table, scan all your customers. So you got the for each, goes through, for every customer, publish, for every new state code, publish. These guys go run their stuff, that goes runs, these guys get numbers, and then it pulls the result back from the properties into the scan customer table run program, which then displays it. So, okay, what has it got us? We've got the same thing as we had before with the procedural stuff. We've got three files to worry about instead of one. Yeah. Well, that's assuming a static world. Boss comes along. Life has changed. We can charge double for the states now. Uh-oh. After the new contract date. So, what do we do? Well, in your traditional world, you would probably go and pass a date in there. You have a case statement saying, if it's before this date, count by two, otherwise count by one. Or in your business logic, you would probably have something a bit more complicated. Case here, case here, case here. Who would be willing to doing that? Pain in the butt, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
Just a royal mess. That's one of the things that events gives us a way around. So what we do? So the question then is, now what? Ah, come here. New class, scan count double. And so that's the definition, and that's the property, still event count. And we have an event increment method, so we're using the same method. But instead of counting by one, we count by two. So for places where this is appropriate, we can go and just use this class instead of the other class to go and do our counting or do our business logic. The change to our customer scan customer table run, same definition here, that doesn't change. Customer count, that doesn't change. State count, that changes. So that one's gonna count by two, this one's gonna count by one every time. This is gonna count by one for every customer, it's gonna count by two for every state. Doesn't change. That changed. Doesn't change. So to go and implement our new business logic for this change in the contract, we replace that and that. Now, we can go run this and we will go and get our updated business logic, which means that we can go and invoice double for the states as opposed to single for the states that we had before. And that's the one. So going back to our who knows what when, you have the scan table class here, customer scan count, state scan count double. Again, they don't know each other. They're all self-contained little islands of functionality, just waiting to go and do something. And then scan customer table run goes and says, okay, subscribe the events here. So you subscribe the customer over here, subscribe the state over here, scan all the customers, get the result back, show it on the screen. Now, wouldn't that be a lot easier to do something like this as opposed to a bunch of case statements?
Yeah, but I still don't see where the date change happened.
Well, okay, we're getting to that.
Okay.
All right. In this particular case where we would go and have, say, that's what's coming up.
Okay.
That's what's coming up. So the question is?
Yes, you're correct. That'd be interesting.
So this is showing how you would do the implementation, okay, in terms of putting in the rules for it. So we're going to have a refactor for additional functionality here, for additional flexibility in terms of how we go and put these things together. So first we're going to do is replace the class declarations with interfaces. Interfaces are basically statements saying this is what any object that comes in here is going to have. It's going to have certain functionality that looks like this. So we can do better. So first we're going to define an iScan count interface. So that's the name of the interface is iScan count. So for those who haven't run into it, this is similar to classes. It's basically saying this is what a class that implements an interface looks like. It doesn't actually implement anything. Just definition. So with public property event count. Now one of the shortcomings of interfaces is that I can't have a private set. They both have to be public. And then we have an event increment method. So anything that implements an iScan count interface has to have this property and this method in it. We're going to define an iScan customers interface. So iScan customers is the name of the interface. This is the customer event and the signature. This is the state event and the signature. And this is the API to go and to scan everything. And there's no parameters in there. So then we're going to go and implement the iScan count interface. We're not going to go into the whole class, but this is what it will look like. So in the code that defines our scan count, this is our interface version of it, we have implements events example interface iScan count. What this means is that anywhere that an iScan count data type is referenced, we can pass a scan count object. Because this object implements the functionality defined by this interface. So that means that we don't have to necessarily worry as much about what we're instantiating in these things. The next one, we have a scan count double, which also implements the iScan count interface. So we're going and generalizing a bit more in terms of this also implements the same thing, but as you saw from the functionality that we had earlier, it does it differently. And then we have an iScan customers interface. Now, so there's a scan customer table which implements the iScan customers. We're not doing it in this talk today, but what this means is that I can go and write class that implements iScan count interface and the iScan customers interface, feed them into this piece of business logic. So if I had a parameter coming in here, I can go feed this into this business logic and it would run it. So what this means, if we have parameters out here, we can go and have something out here which is does the date checking, says this date gets this configuration, this date gets that configuration, pass that in, and we get the result back. And so in this particular case, we're using a static example of iScan customers, iScan count, and that's a replacement for the original explicit object definitions that were there. And then scan customer table is stored there. So you have the object instance here is not the same as the definition, but this is legal because this is defining an interface that says these are the things that you're going to find in there. iScan customer table implements that interface, so this is legal, so that functionality will be available in those here. So there's a scan count, so we're back to counting by one for every customer, counting by one for every state. You subscribe the events together, run the scan, so run through all the customer records, and show the result back. Okay, so that gives us a bit of flexibility, but we can do better. So we're gonna replace the class definite declarations and new with parameters, and then instantiate them in an external procedure. So instead of doing a defined variable, we're defining input parameter using the iScan customers interface, iScan count, doing the subscribe here. So whatever objects we pass here has the customer event, we subscribe the customer count and the state count here. Scan all customers down here, we get the event counts for the customer and the state. So this way we have the definition and our instantiation of the objects happens outside of the piece of code that processes the logic. And replace definitions with, I think we got this backwards. This is the definitions, that's the parameters. Okay, so the next thing we can do here, we're getting closer to what you're looking for, is moving the object definitions into a parameter object. And the parameter object is an object that contains, that's used for going and passing values around to other objects. You can go and put other objects into the parameter object, you can put scalar variables, anything you want that goes in there. We can call a configure program to set up the parameter object. We can call the invoicing program with the parameter object, which contains whichever instances that we're working with. And then you call the UI program with the parameter object. So this is what it would look like. So you have the parameter object as a definition. It goes and calls the configuration. The configuration program here is you're going to pass in what's the context. And it's going to go and say scan table, scan count for before that certain date. If it was for after a certain date, it would go and say double scan count or scan count double. So it's going to go and set the classes that are referenced here based on whatever the configuration, whatever the business logic is that's applicable for this invoicing scheme. And then we come down here, we pass the parameter object into the scan customers, and then we go and report the results back. So this way, we've separated the configuration from the processing from the reporting. So this way, we can go, and the thing here is that we can replace the configuration. We can replace this, and we can replace this on the fly. So this is what it would look like. Scan customer table parm as a scan parm object. We're going to instantiate the scan parameter object. We're going to run this, set up the configuration. So we're going to call a configuration program to go and set the parameters to the correct values. We're going to get the results back by running the scan customer table program. And then we're going to display the results back. So this is scan parameter parm object. So this is the pieces. So every one of these properties holds one for the scanning the customer table, one for the customer count, one for the state count. These can be anything that implements those respective interfaces. So generalized interfaces for those classes and the class. And then we're going to pass this to our scan our configuration. And it's going to go and set up the instances that are going to be used later on. This is where you would go and say, if this date, do it this way. If that date, do it a different way. We got scan customer table. We're going to pass the parameter object into it, establish the subscriptions. So we go into the parameter object for the scan customer table class reference. For the customer event, we're going to subscribe the parameter object's customer count event increment. So that's the customer count property, which points to a scan count class instance, and we're going to tie to the event increment. We're going to do the same thing for the state events down here. So we move the definitions out of here. We are establishing the subscriptions here, and then we go and run everything there. Now one possible critique of this is that we could go and take this and go and put it into the configuration, because if you know that, you might know the way that these things are supposed to be tied together. I put it here because you may not. You might want to defer the associations to a later point in time. And then this is the message, so we're going to display it back out. And so the parameter object, customer count object instance, and we're going to show the event count there and the event count there. So this way we've split the configuration, the operation, and the display into three different places. Ah, what time is it? What time?
14 after.
14 after. So I got till 4:30?
Yes.
Okay, then we have time. All right. So anyway, that is, I do have the code. It will be provided for all this to go and walk through all this, to take it home and to go and apply it in your own particular business situations. The other thing is, like, you can also go and chain events. So you go and have this event fires an event, this fires an event, this fires an event, and do associate things that way. Okay. All right, let me go and I left this running. Any questions while we're waiting? There are other places that events are also appropriate that I've used them for. For example, if you have a user interface piece, and you can go and define a interface for that, which basically says, I'm done. You go and instantiate the user interface, tell the user interface to activate itself. So it goes and does this thing. You subscribe to a done event on the user interface. So when the user goes, says F4 or F1, because it indicates that it's done, you fire off that event later on, and you decide how to handle what the user did in that screen. Okay. Events. Notify. Oh, I guess this isn't going to work. That is not legible. Background, yes. We want white. All right. I'm gonna have to talk this one through. We only got 15 minutes and I don't want to spend it fiddling with this. But what the idea is that using a parameter object, you go and put another object in it which has which can publish an event. You go and subscribe that event to your local procedure, just like we did with the scan count or the count 1 to 10 thing. And then you pass that parameter object through your program code as you're going along. Typically, it's, you know, you've already got state or some kind of context that you have to worry about. So putting this in there as well is not very hard to do. And it's not very obtrusive. The other advantage is that since you've got a parameter object, you can go and add other things to it without going through all the APIs and having to go and add another input value to go and accommodate that parameter value. So as you go through the code, you go and say, okay, this parameter object, this class in there, call the event saying, I did something. That event will be published from there, caught by your top level .p, and runs your, whatever your procedure that you associated with the subscription. Then you go and use that, for example, your progress monitor. How far have we gotten? You know, anyone that's gone and tried to do that when you've got your business logic that's this wide and this deep, it's, you know, you might as well not. But with a parameter object, with the event subscriptions, you can do that in a pretty straightforward manner. You can also go and pass off, you know, like if you're doing debugging and you put something in there and says, this shouldn't happen. So you go and put ties in there to go and say, did I find this? And you can go and pass that off back as sort of a simple logging procedure, which goes and tells you what's going on when it happens as it goes along. This is an advantage over your typical log manager structure, which goes and spits out everything. And so it generates a huge amount of data, and then you got to go and try and filter through it all and find a needle in a haystack. In this particular case, with this kind of events, you'll go and have the needle come to you. Any questions, thoughts, opinions? Oh, come on, that'd be something. Yes, Gus.
All right, so you go to all this extra trouble when you write 10 times as much code as you had before. Is it worth it?
It depends on your requirements. As I mentioned in here, if you foresee the need for the flexibility of changing your code on the fly, absolutely, definitely, yes. If you have, you know, if you're working on something that is going to be a relatively static requirement, where you know that this is the way the world is and it's not going to change, I don't have to go and rearrange things, no. So it does go and provide you with certain maintenance enhancements. Like you saw that we had the scan count. We had used it two different ways. We only had one piece of code, one business logic to go and do that. In our, you know, business application environment, that could be, instead of, you know, one I equals one plus one, it could be, you know, a bunch of logic like this. So we're using it, you know, we're feeding it input information, but we're not doing the filtering in this piece of logic. Anyone else? Anyone have thoughts about how they could use this at home? Yeah? What's your idea?
Well, we change Prompt with an outside tool, and the events would help us to retain what was done, you know, throw a column out, things like that.
So you'd be using it as a logging type of process?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Anyone else have an idea, volunteer, how they could use this?
You can manage Windows close, accomplish.
Managing Windows user interface, that's a typical use. That's the most notable use case, is Windows activity. Say you've got a window form up there. Instead of putting the business logic in there, you go and do publishes of the different events that happen in that form. And then on the outside of that form, you go and do subscriptions to the business logic to handle. When this happens, do that. When that happens, do something else. So the window form itself is going to be just about the user interface, but not necessarily how things, it's not going to have the business logic inside it, it's just going to be about the user interface of the window itself. Anyone else? Well,
kind of like the error handlers, the use case.
That I think is the easiest one to get a hold of is the, come on. That's the easiest one to get a hold of because we do error logging on our own. We go and put message statements in there where we go and say put unformatted into a file or something else like that. So having something that we can go and do and then pass it into a class and either log it into a timetable, log it into a database, or log it into a file or something else like that would certainly make a developer's life easier. So it is a bit different in terms of if you're coming from a procedural world or if you're coming from a procedural-ish world in terms of doing something like this. So it, as I mentioned, the code for this and the documents will be available on the Plug Challenge website at the end of the conference. And I see a question in the back there.
Okay, well, no, you were asking about maybe examples.
Yes. Price calculations and cost calculations all over the place.
Yeah, and so maybe you could put it in one spot and just keep calling.
Yes. So your price and your costs could be separate pieces. Cost based on type of inventory or whatever else like that. Price based on type of material and things like that. So you have a read process to go and read what the inventory is or what was in the sale. And you go and publish, I got this, this, and this. The cost side goes and calculates one value. The price side goes and calculates another value. Instead of going and saying, and having the two pieces of functionality in the same file, and then you gotta go in and keep track of them separately. If you go and tweak one, you might break the other. This keeps the pieces apart, so there's less chance of one of a change to a fix to your costing side, breaking your pricing side, and vice versa. So the most typical scenario I would expect is that you would have something happens, like if you're doing reads or something else like this, you're reading a bunch of data, you're going to say, I found this, and then on the subscription side, and this is how I want to handle this event, this is how I want to handle this event. So, in conclusion, so events provides decoupling of software modules. You don't have to worry about what's on the other side of the API very much. Allows for writing objects without worrying about what's calling it or what it's calling. Allows for late binding of objects and assembling arbitrary collections of object functionality on the fly. And it supports linking of widely separated objects, so or procedures. So you got your procedure down here, which is calling the parameter object, firing off the event that's being tracked by your top level procedure, something like that. Increases development flexibility and can reduce overall development and maintenance time. In the case here where I just said, I just instantiated another class to go and have another counter in our business applications, that could be something pretty substantial that we're doing business logic over here based on one thing and different business logic over, or the same business logic, but for different context over on this side. So I thank you for your time and attention. Any help or service needs, this is what I do. Yes?
What are the downsides to doing this?
Downsides to doing this?
Is there a downside to being loosely coupled?
It is more complicated. You have to keep track of where things are going or are tied together. The compiler will go and do the verification that the publish and the subscribes match up, the signatures match up. But when you go and run something that assembles objects on the fly, that is something that's based on as you run logic, how those decisions are made. So now your program behavior, you know, how you're assembling your program, essentially almost how you're going and programming your program is based on the data, not explicit code. So when we have procedures, it's all clear. This is how everything is tied together, and you outside of a run value, that's the only way you can go and say, well, I want to run something different. With hub and sub in an object-oriented session, that's not the case. I can go and say, I want this object at this time, this object here, tie them together and run something. And so if you go and have a erroneous result come back, you have to go backtrack to the specific context that was going on when that result was generated. to go and find out what the assembly of optics was. Any other questions?
Can you put back up the
URL at the beginning. I think if I do it this way. From beginning. So this is where all the code is. It's up on Google Drive. So there is a zip file at that location. It has all the examples that I talked about in here, all the different iterations of the refactoring. And what it's going to do when you go to that, it's going to go and show you a directory of the zip file. There is a file and then download that you want to do to go and bring it down to your local drive. Okay then. Well, I thank you for coming out and your interest. Hope this was provide a useful in your work in the future. Enjoy the conference.